Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Simon Lambert today is Lee Boyce. And coming up, finally, some relief for borrowers. The Bank of England sliced a chunk off the base rate. Does it mean they think the economy has finally turned a corner and the good times are coming? But if rates continue to fall, are the bad times a returning for savers? Also today, the Chancellor delivered a rather punchy speech earlier this week, announcing a big black hole in the nation's finances and clearing the way for some difficult decisions in her first budget in October. What will those entail? What else was in Rachel Reeves's address? Plus, broadband and phone bills set to soar again as Ofcom rules look to have backfired. And bad news for wannabe homeowners, house prices are on the march again. Don't forget you stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.
But first, by the narrowest of margins, this week the Bank of England pushed through the first rate cut in 4 years, taking interest rates from 5.25%, where they sat unchanged since August last year, down to 5%. But what does it mean for our money? Well, the Bank of England head next, and with inflation back to target, a number of upwards UK GDP revisions from economists, does everyone think we finally turned a corner? But first, Simon Lambert, Lee Boyce, welcome to you both. Simon, it was a bit tight, wasn't it? Explain the decision for us. Why now?
It was tight. It was a knife edge. What swung it was Andrew Bailey. It was Bailey what won it. His was the decisive vote because it was 5-4 and he voted for the cut. I mean, we don't know whether he was the last person to vote. I like to think of it as, you know, like nine angry economists in a room arguing it out. It originally started as like 9-1 for a rise and they managed to get it round 5-4 for a cut.
We don't know that's what happened, really.
Yeah. I've got a suspicion that Hollywood's finest will not be beating down my door for my script idea here. But who would play Andrew Bailey, though? I mean, if it was Mark Carney, it'd be George Clooney, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Clooney for Carney. Who would play Bailey? I don't know. I'm not going to be mean here because Andrew Bailey might listen to the podcast. I'll say George Clooney sure could does. Play Andrew Bailey as well.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Why not?
There you go. He's got to be happy with that. Yeah. I'll admit I was surprised.
Really?
Yeah, I was. Okay, there may be an email floating around the system for me that says they are not cutting rates on Thursday in response to another conversation from which our man, Mystic Mike Sheen, This Is Money's news editor, said, I think they are, and produced something to suggest that they were. Also known as Mike Cat Amongst the Pigeons Sheen, after he threw a massive spanner into the works some time back by saying that he had it from his best, you know, kind of economist contacts that actually there was going to be a rise and there wasn't a rise. So we got ourselves ready for like, could it go either way? And it didn't go either way. But yesterday he was right and it did go either way. In fact, it went one way. It went the opposite way to the way that we thought it was going to go. There was, you know, stuff in the markets were suggesting 60% chance of a cut. So it didn't go the opposite way to what the markets were thinking. But that swings around a lot depending on when you take that measurement of what the markets think and also how you take that measurement. Most people were saying September, not August. That was a surprise. It's come before the Fed. It's come after the ECB, obviously, but it's come before the Fed and it was a surprise. I mean, it could say that we've got inflation under control and that the Bank of England thinks that we don't need to worry about inflation anymore. And so it's time to bring rates down a little bit. It could say that actually they're looking at the effects of raising interest rates. And that, as we've talked about before, those took quite some time to filter through. And maybe only now that you've got through, you know, how many millions of people paying an extra few hundreds of pounds a month on their mortgages as their fixed rates end, that they are starting to feel that, even though supposedly the cost of living crisis is done for the time being. I mean, it could mean that the Bank of England's rate setters think that the Labour Party is going to be really, really bad for our personal finances and are going to whack taxes up. So they were like, oh no, we better get ahead of the curve and cut interest rates. It could be any number of things. I think it's more that the messaging is they think that inflation is under control and the neutral level of rates is lower than they are now. But as you said, it was tight. And we're going to come on to this in a minute. The expectations are that we may see more rate cuts, but not that we're going to see aggressive rate cuts.
Well, Lee, as interesting as the actual decision to cut the base rate was, you know, that it's the headline figure, it's the meetings, it's the chat with Andrew Bailey afterwards, isn't it? That a lot of the personal finance journalists are poring over. What does it mean? What was said? What was the reasoning behind it? Where are we heading next? What did we learn? What did you think? Were you surprised?
I wasn't that surprised. I mean, just think back over the sort of last 12 months where we've had base rate at 5.25%. I think since the start of the year, there's been murmurings about, okay, it doesn't look like base rate's going to be heading any higher. Inflation was starting to sort of nudge down. Let's not forget how high inflation went. You know, it went plus 11%. You know, that was an incredibly difficult period where people were finding bills going up left, right and centre. Now we've got Bank of England's inflation target of 2%, which has been met for a couple of months in a row. So in a way, that almost gives a green light to say, you know, work here has kind of started to work in terms of, you know, this is why base rate has been going up, because we want to make a lid on inflation. Now, core inflation, however, is still relatively high as opposed to CPI. So there was that in consideration as well. I was kind of 50-50. I kind of thought it might happen, it might not. I thought the likelihood is it was probably going to be the next meeting. But it didn't completely catch us off guard. Like, it wasn't like the biggest shock ever. And financial journalists like myself go on the Bank of England website at 11:59 on the Thursday of a rate decision and hit F5 quite a lot. Waiting to see what ticks over. But yeah, I think that, you know, the kind of Andrew Bailey was saying afterwards that the inflation sort of mission is not accomplished yet. As in, it's not completely, we're not completely out of the woods. This isn't going to signal.
The beast is tamed, but not dead yet.
Well, exactly. You know, whatever kind of sweeping kind of metaphor you want to put on it to jazz up a base rate decision, I'd go Nicolas Cage personally for Andrew Bailey, by the way. I think he'd make a great Andrew Bailey, really sort of give it some star quality. Potentially. But, you know,
are you just remaking Face Off? With Andrew Bailey. Right.
Simon, listen, I'd watch a Face Off remake anytime. Definitely in my top 10 movies.
I would, mean, apart from Face Off is amongst those films that this was a thing in the kind of like late 90s, early 2000s. Films that should have ended about 20 minutes to half an hour earlier than they actually did. Face Off is in that list.
No, so I completely disagree. In fact, we could have a whole podcast.
There's a natural endpoint. I'm going to have to... About 20 minutes from the end that it should have stopped at.
Okay. If you do have any views, you can get in contact with us at podcast@somethingorother.com.
podcast@thisismoney.co.uk to tell us when you think Face Off should have ended. And now we will go back to interest rates.
Thank you.
And, you know, looking further ahead here, you know, the kind of forecasts are that there might be another cut before the end of the year, taking it down to 4.75% potentially. Markets forecast that 4% by the end of next year, before eventually settling at about 3.5%. Some economists are a bit more bullish. Capital Economics, for example, are saying that base rate could fall to 3% by the end of next year. A lot depends on, you know, we've got a new government, you know, and as Simon pointed out there, you know, what happens with taxes, you know, this £22 billion. We'll get there in a minute. There's lots of different things at play. But I think that the decision, you could argue, was a sensible one. You know, it was very tight. They obviously pore over this. 5-4 is as tight as it gets, with Andrew Bailey having that divisive vote. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it actually does the stick at 5% until the end of the year, but also wouldn't be surprised if there's a further cut.
So, fair to say that economy better, but doesn't necessarily mean that, yay, we're all, you know, it's on the downward, in a good way, slope, as it were. I'm thinking skiing analogy. That's a good thing.
We're in a bit of a face-off, really, aren't we, in terms of, you know.
The good times are coming.
I mean, define good times.
Or are they here?
I mean, there's lots of people that already, as we've discussed in the podcast before, that are perfectly in good times, you know, that have ridden out inflationary storms, have got wealth squirreled away and haven't had any kind of seismic effect on their finances whatsoever. But there's other people, you know, one in three of us roughly are homeowners, and some of those homeowners have mortgages that have gone up
The homeowners, what will it mean, what will this rate cut mean for them?
Well, to be honest with you, it's a more of a kind of symbolic thing, you know, the fact that base rates are coming down, because we've had over the last few weeks a bit of a battle between the banks, a bit of a mortgage war rumbling on anyway. Big lenders have been kind of nudging rates a little bit lower. We've had a couple of sub 4%, which, you know, for the first time since the start of the year. That's not factoring in the sky high fees that might be attached to those sub 4% rates, but it's, you know, it's not as linked to base rate as what you think. Some are, you know, variable rates, SVRs, for example, you know, should immediately come down because they're linked. But most people would be on a fix. We've kind of seen rates softening anyway, but I mean, an SVR, average SVR at the moment, according to Money Factor, is 8.16%. And that's up from an average of 4.4% in December 2021. That's pretty seismic. We've got 700,000 people who are due to have their fixed rate mortgage end in the second half of this year. That's according to UK Finance. Those people will be hoping that base rate will come nudge down a little bit lower. Banks will be, you know, kind of battling more for competition. We're going to talk about house prices at the end of the show, but, you know, the housing market seems like it's warming up a little bit more. Rates are easing. So this time last year, average 2-year fix was 6.86%. Average 5-year fix was 6.35%. They've now dropped to 5.78% and 5.39%, respectively. And that was without anything happening to base rate. You know, everything's linked really in terms of mortgages to swap rates and what happens there. And those swap rates are, you know, more influenced by long-term projections of the Bank of England base rate and where it's heading next. And there's other factors that play a wider economy, bank targets, and, you know, whether or not banks want to compete with each other. But swap rates are currently, 2-year swap rates are at 4.26%. This time last year, 5.49%. And 5-year swaps are at 3.78%, down from 4.75% a year ago. So it all paints a picture where it's looking hopefully like the bulk of the mortgage pain is kind of over. Again, we've made this argument and talked about this on the podcast before. You know, mortgage rates, we were used to such low rates. I mean, historic low rates. We had it good. We had it good for a decade. If you owned a home and had a mortgage, you had it good. You know, some of those rates that people locked into were just absolutely extraordinary. You know, that was, but they were extraordinary. This is more kind of typical of what you'd expect really to be paying on a home loan. It's just that lots of people might have overstretched themselves. Lots of people might have taken out a 2-year fix at a rock bottom price, then came around to fixing 2 years later and realizing that the whole market's gone bonkers very quickly. I think what homeowners want, home movers want, first time buyers want, is just a little bit more stability. I mean, it has been a bit more stable, I'd argue, especially in the last sort of three to four months. And fingers crossed that we start to see rates nudging a little bit lower. But don't in any way, shape or form expect to be seeing mortgage rates dropping below 1% anytime in the near future, in even sort of mid to long term future. I think those days are potentially gone. But I think what people really want are mortgage rates that are going to be sort of 2.5% to 3.5%, 4%, you know, as in it's a lot more manageable than the rates I was just talking about. Plus 5%, 6%, difficult to stomach.
Goes back to what you were saying about, you know, when I said, are the good times coming back? Well, the good times for who, for when? Because, you know, the last decade or whatever, fab if you're a homeowner, rubbish if you're a saver. rubbish if you're trying to get on the property ladder, because home prices have just been going up ridiculously. But Simon, I think a lot of what people will be thinking, and that goes back to what Lee just said there, is don't expect rates to fall very far very soon. So if you are looking for a fixed rate mortgage within the next sort of 6 months or whatever, what do you do?
If you're looking for a fixed rate mortgage within the next 6 months, then it's time to start looking now. I would work on the basis that mortgage rates are not going to probably come down a huge amount from here, but they might come down a bit. They have already come down in anticipation of the Bank of England cutting interest rates, and also from banks and building societies wanting to compete a bit more on rates in order to pull in more business and make a bit more money. If you read through the financial reports of the big banks and building societies that have come out recently, their results say they had a really tough year. Mortgage market was tough. And also they've been making less money from rising interest rates because they've been forced to pay savers a better rate because there's been some regulatory pressure on them and some government pressure on them and some pressure from people like us who are constantly banging the drum, but also because people have been moving their savings, which again, it's largely thanks to people like This Is Money who have certainly been banging the drum for don't just sit there on your bank's crappy savings rate, move to a better deal. And if you go to our savings tables, thisismoney.co.uk/save, you can very easily find the best savings rates and you can shift your money to them very, very quickly nowadays. So banks haven't been making as much money. Now they're trying to go a bit more on the mortgage market because they've seen house prices not fall substantially in response to higher interest rates. So they've eased their worries a little bit there. They're thinking the housing market is not going to crash due to the very rapid rise in interest rates. They're seeing inflation coming down. They've got no issues with the new government, see it as like stability and everything like that. And so they're being a bit more competitive. So you've already seen rates come down. The best five-year fix from Nationwide went below 4% last week. Now, we could get them tickled down further in expectation of more cuts. It depends how many more cuts we expect. I'm looking at the Bank of England's inflation and monetary policy report here. And in it, the forecast summary is for 2025 Q3, i.e. 1 year's time, base rate 4.2%. That's not a huge amount lower than it is now. And then 2026 Q3, 3.8%. So you're going to see the pace slow down then. And 2027, 3.5%. Are we going to see mortgage rates remaining below base rate for all of that time? So are we going to see in a year's time when base rate is at 4.2%, if this is correct, mortgage rates at 3%? I mean, normally mortgage rates are higher than base rate, but you never know. I mean, I'm definitely hoping in a year's time they're lower than the base rate because my mortgage is up for renewal in pretty much exactly a year's time. And I'm facing quite a big hit to my monthly outgoings. The thing is, these projections could be completely wrong. The forecasts that they take them from is, you know, what the markets forecast, what the economists forecast, what they think will happen. They are very often completely wide of the mark and they swing around quite wildly. I wouldn't recommend this as a weekend activity. You're probably better off watching Face Off. You could go through all of the old monetary policy reports and look at the projections of where base rate's going to be and then see where base rate was. And you can then work out for yourself how much faith you should put in these. I would say that if you do need a mortgage, to go back to your point, then speak to a broker. They will help you not only find the best rate, but find the lender most likely to give you the best deal, lend you the money and everything like that. You can then secure that rate now. If you add the fees to the loan, then that will mean that you don't have to pay any fees up front. And then when you take the mortgage out, if you take the mortgage out, I would recommend then paying the fees off then, because otherwise you're adding the fees to the mortgage and you'll be paying 30, 20, 10 years worth of interest on those fees. So it'll bump up the cost of your mortgage. So do pay those fees off when you take the mortgage out, just pay them off then. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to take that mortgage. And if rates come down between now and when you need to take that mortgage, then you can go back to your broker and say, look, rates have come down. Can you find me a better deal? And they'll go off and they'll search the market and they might come back with a better deal that saves you a bit of money. But if rates go up, you will have managed to lock in to the better rate that you've got. And when I say if rates go up, I mean, if mortgage rates go up, it's highly unlikely the base rate's going to go up between now and then. But mortgage rates move around independently of the base rate regularly. If you're looking further than 6 months down the line, and you can normally lock into a mortgage up to 6 months ahead, if you're looking further than 6 months down the line, you can't really secure a rate now. But I would say plan ahead for it. Be ready to go when you get to that 6 month mark. And if you are looking at your monthly payments going up substantially, start salting away a bit of money now, or trying to adjust your budget so that when it hits you, it's not a big payment shock, and that actually it becomes something that is manageable.
Well, Lee, that's mortgage rates. But we got some news this week about house prices. Bad news, I guess, if you're hoping to get on the housing ladder. It is like a cockroach, isn't it, the housing market?
Yeah, so this is...
It keeps coming up, doesn't it?
It's one of those things. You think it's kind of, you know, on its way down, but, you know, mortgage rates have had a big hit on this. You know, there's not been as much moving around. You know, people have been kind of staying put a little bit more because, you know, worried about the extra cost of taking out a mortgage. So it's kind of, it's not brought the property market to a standstill, but it's definitely not as rampant as what it was before. So Nationwide is saying in its most latest house price index that it's the fastest pace of annual growth since December 2022. It said the house prices are up 2.1% compared to a year ago, bringing the average value up to £266,334. It's still 2.8% below the all-time highs that were in summer 2022. So just to put some context on that, in August 2022, the average property price was almost 274 grand, according to Nationwide, and it fell as low as 257,656 at the start of this year. It means essentially that in 6 months, 10 grand has been added back onto house prices. And I think a bit of that goes to that stability factor. I think people have kind of been loosening up a bit more and kind of going, okay, yeah, we can kind of shoulder this rate, you know, a bit lower than what we were seeing probably summer last year. And I've got a bit of itchy feet, and there's a bit of pent-up demand, and more people were kind of willing to move around and go. Lots of experts that we've spoken to believe they're going to just tick a little bit higher throughout the rest of the year. Robert Gardner, who's the chief economist at Nationwide, is saying that actually housing market activity has been holding quite steady in recent months, and the number of mortgages approved for house purchase are around about 60,000 per month, you know, which is 10% below the level before the pandemic. But, you know, he's saying it's a respectable pace given the higher interest rate environment. So it seems that the property market, as you said, I mean, a cockroach, I think we might have described the property market and property prices as a cockroach on this way, on this podcast before. But it appears that the big crash that always sort of gets banded around never quite materializes. And you only have to take a glance at the Nationwide House Price Index over the last decade to see how fast house prices have risen, especially from the summer of the pandemic to summer 2022. I mean, the rise was absolutely huge. That was seismic. And it's kind of just balanced out a little bit since then. But it appears that it's back nudging higher. You know, could it reach an all-time high within the next year to take us back to summer 2022? Well, you know, what we're about £7,000 off that. I wouldn't bet against it.
All right then, Lee. One final word on the interest rate rise. We've got Simon, you did mention savers there, but is it all downhill from here for savings rates, and what can you do to protect your money?
Are we back to downhill being bad or downhill being good?
Downhill in this context is bad. Yeah.
It's bad. It's going to be an uphill struggle for savers as rates go downhill.
Yes.
Yes. It is not the best news for savers. Savers have been enjoying much higher rates off the back of interest rates rising substantially. What they hadn't been enjoying for quite a long period of interest rates rising substantially is high inflation, which had been eating into their returns and sitting above rates for quite a period of that. But for the last while, savings rates have been higher than inflation. And the good news is that whilst inflation looks backwards, savings rates look forwards. So actually, they've been getting an even better deal than if you just compared the two numbers. But we are back to the position where rates are coming down and we are going to see savings rates cut. We've already seen some savings rates cut. There are some of the best deals out there will be cut. We've seen one of the best deals out there, CHIPS, easy access, cash ISA, the flexible ISA, has fallen to 4.84% because it was linked to the base rate. And quarter point off the base rate took the rate down. That just means that the rate moves immediately, but we're going to see other providers lowering their rates. I would expect to see a wholesale revision of the top rates on our savings tables, you know, within the next week or so. Mm-hmm. But as they shift down, what I'd like to see is them shift down, ideally by less than the base rate cut, but, you know, at maximum only by the base rate cut. There will be some sneaky banks and building societies that decide to lower them by more than the base rate cut, or they will lower their savings rates before they lower their mortgage rates and just squeeze an extra little bit of cash out of people. The one thing I would say, though, is savings rates falling just makes it even more important that you get your cash savings into an ISA. Stop paying tax on your savings. Personal savings allowance, £1,000 a year, but only if you're a basic rate taxpayer. If you're a higher rate taxpayer, it's £500. If you are an additional rate taxpayer paying 45p tax, it's nothing. And actually, for the people underneath that in the 60% tax trap, it counts towards their income, so they don't really get the personal savings allowance anyway. So basically, what you need to do is put your money in a cash ISA, and then you're not paying any tax on it whatsoever. And because that will have much more of an impact on your rate than losing a quarter point when the Bank of England cuts rates.
That's it, part one.
I'm joined now by Rob Morgan of Charles Stanley Direct for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Rob, welcome to the podcast. Here's a topical question for you. What does the Bank of England's rate cut mean for investors?
As has been talked about, it was a knife-edge decision whether there would be a cut or a hold. It could have gone either way. But the market was very confident there was going to be a cut in August, or if not, one in September. So although a symbolic moment, a month doesn't make a whole lot of difference to things market-wise, which is why there wasn't a huge reaction to the news. And what's more important really for everyone, so whether you're a borrower, a saver, or an investor, is where interest rates go from here. And lots of people are asking whether we'll see more cuts this year and to what extent. And the Bank of England have painted a variety of scenarios for where inflation goes and where interest rates end up as a result. And their base case is that it stays moderate, and that will allow them to cut interest rates a bit more. But of course, they're not specific about what that actually means. So for what it's worth, the markets think we'll end up with one more cut this year, later on in the year, a few more in 2025, taking us to the sort of 4% level or thereabouts. And overall, I think that could bode well for UK markets and economic growth, particularly if consumers start to feel they've got more money in their pockets to spend. But also at the same time, can't take anything for granted. There's a good chance inflation is kept largely under control and the Bank of England can cut further. But there is a less happy scenario that the bank, in fact, outlined yesterday, whereby inflation is a bit more sticky. You've got wage increases and services inflation keeping overall headline inflation that little bit higher, and the bank might be unable to make so many cuts. So that won't be so good for markets. So we have to consider that scenario as well.
For investors, obviously in the UK, we look to the Bank of England, but is a move by the US Federal Reserve more important, and would it have potentially more impact for UK investors than the Bank of England?
Yeah, I think it would. The Bank of England base rate is the most important thing for UK borrowers and savers and domestically for businesses. But for investors, really, it's the global picture on inflation and interest rates that matters more. And pivotal to that is the Federal Reserve, the US Central Bank. And global markets can move a lot on changes to the Fed interest rates and even slight changes to the language that the Fed comes out with in terms of its expected path of inflation and interest rates, because ultimately that's what dictates the price of borrowing in dollars, the world's reserve currency. So internationally, companies earn in dollars and pay interest in dollars far more than they do in any other currency. So it's the most important central bank to consider by a long way. And there's been some restrictive interest rates in the US too, just as there has been here. But we are now very close to the point that they're going to start cutting. So the Fed are widely expected to cut in September as price rises in the US have started easing quite concertedly now. And that's a positive factor for markets, reduces the cost of borrowing for growth on a global basis. What that means for investors, a bit less clear cut, to be honest with you, because market moves are really a case of how reality meets expectations. Cuts are factored in already, and there's going to be a sort of better or worse outcome for investors depending on whether rates end up on a lower or higher trajectory than currently anticipated. But overall, if inflation is moderating in the world's largest economy and the central bank is cutting rates, then that's generally a good thing, provided the economy is holding up okay.
Rob, thank you very much.
Thanks, Simon.
Welcome back. So that was all on Thursday. It's been a big week for personal finance. A couple of days before that, the Chancellor delivered what was, well, it was almost sort of a reverse Truss mini budget to Parliament. Rachel Reeves announced what she said was the surprise discovery of a £22 billion black hole in the public finances, blamed, of course, on the previous government, which had led her to make and would lead her to make some tough decisions. Gone are a number of large infrastructure projects, but so too is the universal aspect of winter fuel payment, the social care cap, and the NatWest share sell-off. Hello, a budget on October the 30th, and hello, tax rises. Goodbye, some tax breaks maybe in it. What was it really all about, Lee Boyce?
It was all about putting that budget in half term. What were they thinking? I mean, honestly, parents.
Someone with no kids, I didn't even notice that.
Simon and I are just tearing our hair out. We're like, oh my goodness, they announced the budget slap bang in the middle of half term. We've both booked a holiday. Oh, no, how dare they? What was it all about? It was about not about Simon and I's dilemma today. It was all about this £22 billion black hole that has been a surprise. You know, biggest surprise of all time. I mean, yeah.
Well, it would surprise me if I found that in my finances, yeah. I tell you.
I mean, I don't know how big or small they thought the black hole was going to be, but there we go. So I think the most controversial, let's go straight for the most controversial thing, I think, in this whole part, was the winter fuel payment. So basically, all pensioners, universal, get it up. It's worth up to £300. People got an additional payment last year from the cost of living crisis. That has gone unless you're on pension credit. That will not be universally paid out anymore. Now, there's a couple of sort of things to point out on this. So I think that a lot of people that aren't of pensioner age think of that winter fuel payment and think about people like, do you remember when Lord Sugar was like sending his winter payment back saying, I'm a millionaire, I don't need this.
That's
kind of painting a picture in some people's minds that there's lots of like millionaire pensioners that are getting this payment and needlessly getting this payment, which is not right and probably hasn't really ever been right. But there's lots of pensioners out there who are struggling but do not qualify for pension credit. So there's about 880,000
pension credit reminders, Lee, how it works, the benefit of it
basically tops up your state pension for low income pensioners. But it unlocks a lot of other benefits, things like your free TV license, etc. This is now going to be clubbed into this kind of like additional perks, almost like having a current account with perks. It's like, you know, here's the extra perks, you know. And you're going to need to be in that. There's lots of people that just do not qualify.
Yeah, just slightly credit. Over, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So Age UK is saying, we strongly oppose the means tested winter fuel payment because our initial estimate is that as many as 2 million pensioners who badly need the money to stay warm this winter will not receive it and will be in trouble as a result. Yet at the other end of the spectrum, well-off older people scarcely notice the difference. It's a social injustice. I mean, that's quite strong words. It was quite a shock decision. I don't think anyone really kind of...
It was really randomly. Like, as personal finance journalists, we were listening to this speech and it was like, okay, what are they going to announce? And that was really the first thing that sort of caught it. I don't know if she was saying it because we're protecting the triple lock, we can't do it. But why mention it then? Of all the things she could have mentioned, it seems quite a... Yes, for a lot of people, it's quite important, but it seems quite a small thing to have sort of brought out in a speech which didn't have a huge amount of details. Do you know what I mean? I get what you mean.
I think the point she was trying to make is that over the last couple of years, pensioners have had quite big rises in the state pension because of where inflation has been, and that triple lock is expensive to maintain. We've had all of this argument, you know, it's almost like pitching generations.
Why not wait until the budget and say that?
I can't get into Rachel Reeves to tell you that. But I guess it lands better now when it's summer, when it's hot out, before, instead of, you know, at the end of October when the weather turns bad and of a sudden you're looking even, you know, nastier for doing it. There's going to be difficult decisions that are going to be made. And I understand that there's going to need to be cutbacks. But, you know, this one felt particularly nasty, but you could argue that, you know, pensioners have had a big boost in recent years in terms of state pension. But then lots of pensioners will tell you that the state pension is not generous at all compared to our counterparts, you know, elsewhere around the world. And that actually is still meagre. The state pension is still meagre. And this is just another nail in the coffin for those that, you know, are potentially not going to qualify for pension credit, and are now going to have some difficult choices to make this winter when it comes to switching the heating on, which, you know, it feels a little bit nasty. I'm surprised it was that broadly swept. You know, I'm surprised it's just gone into pension credit. I mean, it would be difficult to means test absolutely everyone that doesn't qualify for pension credit for this payment. Understand that probably, you know, the top 25% of people that claim state pension don't necessarily need this payment. You can maybe even argue 50% of them, but it still leaves a lot of pensioners out there that are going to have some difficult choices. And I would say to anyone that's listening to this or have you know, parents, grandparents that are going to be affected by this, is to find out if they qualify for pension credit or not. You know, don't be too proud to claim pension credit. You know, just go and find out if you can get it or not, and whether you qualify, it's money that's rightfully you know, theirs or yours. So, you know, go and find out. You can do it on the government website.
That was one welcome aspect of it. She said that, you know, actually hundreds of thousands of people who could claim this are not claiming this. So they're going to try to raise awareness of pension credit. And like you said, it is a gateway drug benefit to other things like prescriptions and TV license and all those sorts of things.
The thing is though, Georgie, they've tried to ramp up their kind of, you know, advertisement of this. The previous government did. And in fact, they went on a big drive on trying to get people to sign up for pension credit, which kind of semi-worked. But we also had a period in which the DWP got a bit overwhelmed by the amount of people that were sheerly trying to sort of qualify for this in the cost of living crisis. So I don't think there is a complete lack of knowledge of what it is. I think there are just some pensioners out there that think, you know, they're just too proud to try and claim it, and it feels like a benefit that they're not entitled to. But this could be the boot up the backside that kind of gets more people to go for it, because they go, hold on a minute. You know, we've been getting this winter fuel payment for a long time. You're stripping it away from me. That's it. That is going to be the catalyst for me to go and find out if I qualify or not. But, you know, at the same time, there was lots of anger on social media about this, Georgie, and lots of people were sort of talking about this and then talking about the public sector pay rises, you know, 5-6%, and that, you know, Labour basically are kind of in tandem with unions and all of that kind of stuff again. And it was a lot of angst. I mean, social media has become a real cesspit this last year, I'd argue anyway, but it was real, real anger flying around about this. And it feels like more so than ever in all aspects of our lives, it feels like everything's getting very divided in this country. Lots of generational divide, lots of divide over the haves and have nots. And yeah, it's becoming kind of, I think we're not even a month into a Labour government, and the amount of stuff that it's already having to sort of deal with, the honeymoon period has been a bit of a sharp learning curve, I'd imagine.
Well, I hate to stir that pot a little bit, Lee, but I do wonder, listening to her speech, Simon, when she, you know, it did sort of, you know, it's their fault. We've got a 222 billion black hole. We need to fill it. Difficult decisions, quote, are going to have to be made. The mentioning of the pensioners, I saw you agree with Lee there about, you know, maybe because it's warm weather. True. But it does seem to be like perhaps all the speculation on things like wealth tax, pension tax relief. I know that will affect anyone paying a pension, but, you know, winter fuel payments. There is a sort of perhaps an idea that maybe those sort of boomers who've had it so good over the last however long may be the target now.
Yes, I would think so. I mean, I personally, I was absolutely shocked to discover that Labour had found a reason that they needed to put our taxes up. I mean,
at least they found one, right?
who could possibly have foreseen
that this
would occur? That they would find a black hole that would mean that they'd need to maybe row back on some of that, you know, we're not going to put your taxes up stuff. It's just unbelievable. The problem is they've painted themselves into the same corner that the Tories painted themselves into by promising not to raise the rates of the taxes that bring in the most money. And so they are left with trying to kind of do some tinkering around the edges or come up with some ways to grab some money back. I'm going to give Rachel Reeves the benefit of the doubt here. There was a lot of rhetoric in that speech, but maybe she was surprised. Maybe there was stuff that turned up
that was more expensive.
She was. I mean, to give right of reply to Jeremy Hunt, he said, nope, you know, not true. We didn't cover up any of this stuff. We didn't hide it. Wonderfully, a right of reply also should be given to Liz Truss, who put out a statement herself this week saying, you can't blame me. It's not my fault. And it has been proven it's not my fault.
Oh, poor Liz.
They are still blaming Liz. And actually, Rachel Reeves' comment yesterday about people paying higher mortgage rates due to the Liz Truss mini budget, you know, at the moment. There are people paying higher mortgage rates right now on their mortgage due to the mini budget, because they unfortunately had to remortgage after the mini budget. Mm-hmm. But people taking mortgages out now are not paying higher mortgage rates due to the mini budget. This is nonsense, okay? They are paying higher mortgage rates due to interest rates having gone up by so much to deal with inflation. The Truss mini budget, the effect of that went. We've actually, since the Truss mini budget, just to put things in perspective, we saw rates spike, we saw rates then come back down, and then we saw rates spike again last summer when there was an inflation panic, and then they've come back down again. What people are doing is paying more tax due to the Truss mini budget, because the tax cutting measures were swiftly reversed by the fund police in the form of Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak, who then raised people's taxes, continued with the frozen thresholds. But Rachel Reeves doesn't want to draw attention to that, because she's going to continue getting those people to pay more tax with throws and thresholds, etc. And it's looking increasingly unlikely, unfortunately, that she is going to reform the bits of the tax system that really do need reforming, all the tax traps and stuff that we bang on about. But the difficulty is how do you target those supposedly wealthy boomers? They might not be the Labour Party's core voting element, right? But lots of them will have actually voted for Labour. They will have voted for change, as Labour offered. And it's really quite difficult to define and draw the line between pensioners who aren't living high on the hog and pensioners who are actually doing better than most employed people. And this winter fuel payment thing is exactly that. A line was drawn, and arguably the line was drawn too low. There's a huge backlash from this already, and the backlash is going to continue. I genuinely think that this was a mistake. I think for the amount of money that it raises, I think it wasn't worth doing. There is an argument for universal benefits. The argument for universal benefits is that by giving them to everyone, everybody supports them, and it also means you don't need to start doing crazy stuff, trying to take it back from some people and let other people have it, and you don't get the kind of backlash. The biggest example of this is the child benefit stuff that was brought in by George Osborne. Before he did that, child benefit was universal. Now, you may think or you may not think that child benefit should go to all parents with children. It's not a huge sum of money. You could argue that people with more money don't need it, but removing it has caused absolute chaos in parts of the tax system, and it has also caused a scenario where there is more intergenerational unfairness, because our parents' generation were happily picking up child benefit, we're not picking up child benefit. The new threat is flat rate pension tax relief. Our parents' generation got tax relief on their pensions full based on their tax rate. Now there's talk that that might get taken away from our generation. Now our parents' generation are getting winter fuel payments, and they're all getting them. And actually the generation before didn't get those because they're a relatively new invention, but maybe that line needs to be higher. But how do you draw that line if you don't use something like pension credit? Are you going to means test all those pensioners on their income? And pensioners' income isn't necessarily level every year. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. People take less. And, you know, most people, a lot of people now, not most people, because actually there's still a lot of pensioners on defined benefit pensions. You know, a lot of people who are on defined contribution pensions may take out more one year than they take out in another year. And means testing all that starts to get very difficult. So I don't know, you know, this is a very difficult situation. What I would hope actually is that the kitchen sinking that is going on here is actually the precursor to October 30th. Do you know what? Things are actually going a bit better than we thought. The economy has picked up. Inflation is low. Interest rates coming down doesn't just benefit people with mortgages, benefits the government. And actually, we might have a little bit more room here than we need. And we don't need to put your taxes up just yet. We can't be cutting them yet, but we don't need to put them up just yet. And if we continue on this trajectory, we might be okay. Maybe we're going to get an optimistic tone there. And it will be, look what we've done to improve the economy since we took over. And it will conveniently ignore that the economy was already getting better when the Tories were booted out a month ago.
Maybe. Putting the winter fuel specifics behind, looking at sort of the speech holistically and the sort of intent behind it, throughout the very small sort of campaigning period, but actually Rachel Reeves has tried to say, your money is in safe and steady hands. If we cannot afford it, we won't pay for it. And I think it sort of sets a tone to try and reassure that this is not Labour potentially of old that's just going to be willy-nilly with our money. Now, look, I can't speculate as to what she's going to do, but I used an analogy, which is probably quite offensive to Arsenal fans, that, you know, when Arsene Wenger left, Lee's eyebrows just shot off his head there. You know, when you've had someone in for a very long time, there are practices and projects that you look at and you think, are we actually getting value for money? Is this working properly? And I think it is reassuring to think that the government now may be looking into certain things. I can see perhaps I'm being a bit rose-tinted here, but I would like to look on the positive side. That they're looking into things right now and thinking, are we really getting value? Is this working? So she's having that new office for value for money or whatever they're talking about. This sort of thing, I think, is potentially quite positive. One thing that really created actually quite a lot of stress, and I think it was Paul Johnson from the IFS who was saying, picked up on it quite quickly, was the social care cap. That was supposed to come in, I believe, April next year. That's been scrapped. Where does that leave people?
In a staring down the barrel of a lottery scenario, where if you end up needing to go into a care home due to ill health, dementia, something like that, you're unlucky enough for that to happen and you don't get to see out your final days in your own home, you could see absolutely massive bills unless you have almost no savings whatsoever, to the point where you are potentially falling below the emergency savings pot level that we were discussing last week, or well below the emergency savings pot level. It is a problem that has needed to be sorted out for an unbelievable amount of time. There was something that was done called the Dilnot Review, that was never put into place. If it had only been put into place all those years ago, we would at least have a much better system and be in a much better place than we are now. The Tories were going to do this. In fact, actually, we talked in the like final before the election podcast, or maybe the after the election podcast thing. They're like, what good stuff did the Tories do for us? And we talked about some of the stuff like raising the personal allowance, raising the minimum wage, all that kind of stuff. Actually, one good thing that they were going to do was going to bring in this social care spending cap. I mean, already social care had basically sunk Theresa May when she had her ill-fated re-election, although actually she did manage to get elected, didn't she? But Boris Johnson was the man who finally grabbed this extremely thorny nettle bull by the horns, whatever metaphor you want to use, and decided to try to shove something through that at least made the system better. It wasn't perfect, but it at least made the system better, and that's now been canned. So I hope that Rachel Reeves has got a better plan that she's going to announce on the 30th of October, because just canning this because it's expensive would be foolish.
Just a quick word about the NatWest share sell-off before I'm going to ask Lee about what we can expect and really expect in the budget. But Simon, what?
Massive disappointment. Massive disappointment for investors and the investment industry, because the government is not going to sell us back shares that we already own at a discounted rate. basically, we still own a big chunk of NatWest. Mm. There was a big plan for a TelSID style sell-off, which was going to encourage a new generation of investors. The shares would be sold at a discount to the share price. And that would mean that people would get the opportunity to make a bit of money and everybody would get really interested in investing. Quite a lot of interest in this, surprising amount of interest in this, despite the fact that you could actually go out and buy NatWest shares while I'm talking, because NatWest is actually already a traded company. And the thing about those privatizations, the TelSID style privatizations, is they involved, yes, something that we owned as taxpayers, but they were not listed on the stock market already. Mm-hmm. And then we were offered the opportunity to take a stake in them, and, you know, often at a discount. We did well, most recently Royal Mail, for example. NatWest is a slightly weird case because we already own that bank or the stake in that bank. We could buy them, the shares. The shares were going to be sold to us at a discount, but that would mean that the people selling the shares lost some money. And you never guess who the people selling the shares were. That'd be us, wouldn't it? So all quite complicated. So anyway, the Labour government has decided that this is just, you know, bin it.
Yep.
And they're going to slowly sell the shares back onto the market. So we could be recording this podcast in 30 years' time in our dotage and we've still got a 5% stake in NatWest.
Probably. Lee, the budget, October 30th, apologies if you have to cancel your holiday. What can we really expect? You've got a piece from Ros Altman. Lots of talk about changes to pension tax relief. Lots of speculation about wealth taxes, because as Simon pointed out, they've protected the triple lock of income tax, national insurance and VAT, as well as the pensioner triple lock. So where will the axe fall? Where will changes happen? Changes to pension tax relief, though. Baroness Ros Altman's piece.
Yeah, so I can't forecast what's going to be in the budget. I mean, there's so many rumours and things that are being bandied around. But one area that it kind of might be changing or ripe for reform is pension tax relief. So basically, if you're a high rate taxpayer, you get 40% tax relief. Lower earners, then you get 20% tax relief, the way that the system works, and in which basically you get a boost in your private pension when you're paying in. And that's, you know, something that why we've always said that is well worth maxing out your pension, because it's so generous the way you're taxed on it and the way that that's taken back and the way it works. We kind of ran a piece here because someone got in touch and said, you know, is there any plans to sort of label it unfair? Basically, you know, you could argue that lower rate taxpayers need the boost more because they're kind of not saving as much into a pension, and it's a big discrepancy. So would a flat 33% system work? Now, I should point out here, this is someone that's written into us asking if a system like this would work, and Ros has had her response in here. She says in here, it sounds appealing in theory, but in practice it would create an administrative havoc for most pension schemes because of the two different systems. There's the way the tax relief is kind of administered, so net pay and relief at source. Each is quite complicated. I won't go into it all because you'd be well worth just looking at the piece because it's quite in depth. It is very expensive for the government to have this pension tax relief. But the big argument is, if you start tinkering with that, and where we've gone for many, many years now of encouraging people to save into their private pension for their future and not rely on the state pension, to then start moving the goalposts, it can get quite messy. And it could start putting people off, you know, saving for their private pension. What is it you want us to do? You know, do you want us to save into a private pension? It's one of those things, if you move the goalposts, people start saying you're going to move the goalposts all the time. And, you know, it becomes less attractive. So lots of arguments in that respect. In terms of what else might be in this budget, I mean, it really could be anything, Georgie, in terms of sort of wealth taxes. The few things we know that they have kind of promised in the manifesto, which was to not raise income tax, national insurance, VAT or corporation tax. But it has fueled fears that there might be changes to capital gains tax, inheritance tax. There's been lots of wild things being banded around about council tax. I mean, that's not, let's face it, many councils facing or face bankruptcy. But the system is pretty outdated, the way the banding system works and the way that these properties were put into these bands when it first started. And I think pension tax relief, it really could be on the block as well, in terms of it could get shuffled around. If you're talking about ways in which to try and fill this black hole that's been sort of talked about, I mean, the thing is with pensions and the thing is with pension tax relief is that lots of the public already find it hard, lots of workers find it hard to engage with their pensions anyway. And you could argue that they wouldn't quite completely grasp what this would mean for them. But the likelihood is, if you're a high rate taxpayer, it wouldn't spell very particularly good news. But could you get away with it? That's what I always think about these things. It's sort of like, you know, tax rises and the sneaky way. I always think of the example of insurance premium tax. No one has a real Scooby-Doo what it is. IPT.
Sure, that had record.
It's record. And it's gone up and up and up and up. And it's been a bit of a pet project of mine to sort of really hammer home. You know, your car insurance, your home insurance, your travel insurance has all got more expensive. A large part of what you're paying is IPT. It's just basically levied on insurers, but insurers just levy it on you and they have to pay the government. It's gone up expertly. But the general public has got IPT insurance premiums.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's where the real wins are for a government, is just managing to sneak in stealth taxes that, you know, the general public find it hard to get their head around. And, you know, are you going to spend your afternoon trying to get your head around the ins and outs of how pension tax relief works, or are you just going to go, but if you're listening to this podcast, I like to think that you're pretty well engaged with your money and your finances. But you got to remember that there's a lot of people out there that it would just shut us down.
All right. Well, we're going to leave IPT and we're going to leave the budget to one side, because there is plenty of time between now and then where speculation will abound, and I'm sure we will discuss it again. But the cost of millions of mobile phone and broadband deals is set to soar again. Hang on, you might think. Didn't Ofcom announce they would ban those huge inflation-linked price rises from next January, you're asking yourself? Indeed, that is the case. So why will some customers see rip-off price hikes of up to 14%, and it's those on the cheapest deals who probably can least afford it that might be hit the hardest?
Georgie, right. this is a real shocker. I'm going to be honest.
You're going puce, actually. Yeah. There you are. I didn't know what was up. I was almost going to stop. You were like looking at jumping in. I just want to see something.
Listen, I think that on the whole that actually Ofcom are not a bad organisation. They actually do some good stuff. And I think you might remember a little while back when I was kind of singing its praises when our broadband came up for renewal. Broadband provider wanted to whack it up absolutely massively. But then there was a little box saying Ofcom makes us tell you what the cheapest deal is that you could switch to. And actually, I ended up saving money. So, you know, in a way, it does do things correct. But let me talk to you about sitting on the sofa and Kevin Bacon. Now, I was just watching TV. I don't know what I was watching. And one of those EE adverts came on with Kevin Bacon. You know, he's all over the EE adverts. And I was sort of just watching it, sort of don't know what I was doing, but I was just kind of, I was like, oh, what's that little message that's come up on the screen? And it said, contracts will rise £3 every April. I was like, and it was in quite bold writing. And I thought, wait a minute. Okay, so this must be the new rules where, you know,
a
year into your contract.
But not like £3 annually, but like
exactly £3 a month from when you the contract was after a year. I thought, hang on a minute. This has got to be these new rules, right? Where we had this mad system where telecoms companies would whack up prices every year baked into your contract of a set amount plus RPI, typically plus RPI, the higher of the two inflation measures, of course. And we were in a mad situation in the last couple of years where we have seen bills for telecoms go up hugely after we've signed a contract. Because the rate of inflation has been so high, we face some really quite big mid-contract price rises. So Ofcom turned around and gone, right, we're going to stop this. You know, it needs to be laid out in pounds and pence how much bills will go up if you sign a contract with this company after a year and after 2 years. Most of us do take out 2 year contracts, some of us take out 3 year contracts these days. We've been pushed into 3 year mobile phone deals left, right, and center. 36 months all of a sudden has become the default option at some of these telecoms firms, by the way, which is pretty mad. But I think this has had, so I went away. I told Sam Barker, he tends to write a lot of our telecom stuff. I said, hold on a minute, you know, is this fair? If £30 a month, this is what they're advertising for this broadband deal, and that's going up £3 a month after year one, and it's going to probably do the same. I was like, but that's 10%. That's just a 10% rise baked in. And we're now in a point where inflation has come down, and it's likely that a 10% rise next April is going to be higher than it would have been with a set amount plus RPI. I'm like, this is bonkers. This is absolutely bonkers. So we kind of went to Ofcom and said, Harry, what's going on here? All the telecoms providers now have brought it out. We had a story this week about TalkTalk, this new we're going to call it a flat fee system. Basically, some people are going to see their bills go up 11% guaranteed from April 2025 under these new rules. But it's okay, according to Ofcom, because they're laying it out to you in pounds and pence rather than the kind of unknown RPI plus whatever it is, usually 3.9%, and consumers can't get their head around that. What does that mean? You know, and actually, arguably, it's very hard to then work out what you're going to then be paying from April onwards. But why has this become the default? Why is it all of a sudden we've just accepted that bills could just go up every year? And just because it's now laid out in pounds and pence under Kevin Bacon's big beaming face on the TV, does that make it okay? I don't understand.
It doesn't.
So, yeah, I'm quite incredulous about it, Georgie, actually. I think that
it's a good fight, Lee.
You know, we're talking £3, £5, whatever, on a broadband deal, on a mobile deal. But it all adds up
over
the years.
Every deal. No matter whether you've got like a £12 or like a 50 quid or whatever. £3.
Exactly. You know, so if you're on a small, and that's going back to what you just said there, if you're on a deal that's quite small and it's on this flat fee system, well, you're going to have a higher percentage rise than you are someone that's paying quite an expensive bill because you're getting the same flat fee rise. And I honestly, I've stepped away and I've been thinking about it. Like Sam went and did a great job on this. He went and found out all the telecom firms, what they're doing. He's been talking to Ofcom and he knows that I've been quite angry about it because I don't understand how this has kind of come about and how is this any improvement? I just don't understand.
At least now you know you're being ripped off.
Well, maybe that's the argument. You know, it's better to be knowledgeable that you're going to be facing these rises rather than the kind of unknown percentage where you're looking at it going, weird. You know, some of the providers say, you know, improve transparency and consumer understanding of the change. And it's just boosting your profits, isn't it? Boosting your profits. It's absolutely mad. And I'll tell you what, the first telecoms firm to come out there, mobile phone, broadband, whatever, that just refuses to do these rises, it will be a winner because I think it's got baffling. And listen, you could argue that this is simplifying it and that it makes it clearer what you're going to be paying after year one. Why are we just accepting it as the norm? I just don't get it. And it annoys me a lot.
I guarantee you won't be accepting it, Lee.
Keep it up. But you're kind of snookered, really, because all of the companies do it, don't they? So it's kind of like, what you just have to try and find the best of the worst, which is a kind of phrase for it feels like a lot of things in our financial lives.
But over a barrel on this, aren't you? It does seem sort of like cartelish almost.
Well, it does. You know, how did they all just come up with this figure out of thin air? You know, and it all just so happens to be roughly the same amount.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and kind of collectively, we're talking about, let's say, you know, for your mobile, broadband, TV package, whatever, you know, we're talking about average 10 to £15 a month from April 2025. You ramp that up over all households over Britain. It's a huge amount of money. Huge amount. And as I say, I think what's made me even more annoyed about this is that potentially rises next April would have been smaller just with this inflation way of doing it, which I never agreed with either. But with inflation kind of a bit of a lid on it at the moment, would it have been 10% rise with the 3.9% plus? I'm not sure.
All right, then. There are a lot of stats there from Lee, but there's only one stat that counts, and that is Simon's Stat of the Week. Second week in a row, this is going to be a thing, isn't it, Simon? Well, it depends what you've got for me this week. Make it a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a stat that I'm going to give credit to Dan Needle of Tax Policy Associates for, from a post that he put up, which is the UK tax system. And out of all of the taxes that raise £1 billion or more, there is about £1 trillion worth of tax being raised. How much of it do you think is raised by a combination of income tax, VAT, national insurance, corporation tax, and council tax? The big one, two, three, four, five. Okay. Out of £1 trillion, they raise about £792 billion. So they raise pretty much 80% of all of the tax income, right? That highlights how difficult it is to try to get more money off people. If you say you won't raise any of those other ones and you can't raise council tax because people will go mad.
That is a good stat. Like it. Like it, Simon. You can come again next week. Right, that's it. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into, Simon.
You can email us at podcast@thisismoney.co.uk if you haven't already done so to tell us what you think of Face Off. You can tweet us at This Is Money, or you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to join in the debate and read the comments.
And we've got a special guest on the show right now. Are you going to say hello?
Yes.
Hi. Do you listen to your daddy's podcast? No. Oh, well, never mind. There's still time, Lily. There's still time. If you like our podcast, unlike Lee's little daughter, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.